As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to Full Time with Meg and Steph. One last time, I think, for both of us actually being in World Cup countries. I'm still in Melbourne, not Melby, as we learned in the worst possible way. About to fly to Sydney tomorrow, and then I go home. Steph, where are you right now?
I am in Aotearoa, New Zealand. I'm in Auckland. Just flew in this morning. I had someone text me like, hey, do you have availability today in Melbourne? I was like, girl, I'm in Auckland already. She's like, you move fast. Yeah, dude.
Yeah. So you're now on Japan duty, essentially.
I'm on Japan duty. They will be playing Sweden next. And if we're going to make any predictions, even if I think Japan are too good to be jinxed with predictions.
Maybe. Let me just say that. Like, I would love that for them.
Right. I would edge Japan in this just based on how they've been playing. Right.
They have been able to adapt to pretty much every single team they've played. Yes.
I saw some of the way the United States, they play most like in a 3-4-3, not a 4-2-3-1. But I saw the way the United States was penetrating Sweden a little bit with some of their through balls. And I was like, oh, Japan would have eaten those up. Okay.
Yeah. I will be very curious to see how that game goes. I'll put it that way. Like, I feel like anyone who advanced out of the USA Sweden game to be greeted with Japan, I was just like,
I mean, that's not even the most comical thing, though, which is that Spain and Japan could meet again, somehow ending up back on the same side of the bracket.
Yeah, the bracket construction is definitely a little weird just in how you kind of stay put on your side of the bracket. So anyway, well, we both just finished watching England, Nigeria. So I know, like, we obviously are going to talk about USA, Sweden and the processing of all of those emotions and what that game was like. But also, I do want to start with just like a massive shout for Nigeria, who vastly outplayed, like, from kind of every level, England, and then just couldn't get it done in penalty. Like, 2-0 draws with penalties back to back in this tournament.
And the team that played better did not go through.
Yeah. It's just, there was a shout for potential penalty against Lucy Bronze too late in the game. Like, just happened in that match. It was a real emotional journey. But, I mean, we were both talking about how Nigeria looked so prepared for England. Like, they reduced England extremely efficiently. So in the tactical, because I feel like Serena Wegman just gets all this credit for the massive tactical adjustment and then hits this round of 16 game. And it's just like, they got outplayed.
Yeah. I have no idea what happens when, because we see it over and over again, right? A coach who seems to be, who thinks about tactics, clearly like thinks about them constantly and knows about them, like can't seem to adjust. And so I'm just wondering, I really don't think it's the case that these people are just stupid Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, I don't.
Like, I think fans like to be reductive and be like, ah, oh, they don't know what they're doing. And I'm like, I think they know what they're doing. But there's so many other factors going into roster construction and how you want to play, even your own mentality. Like, are you scared? Do you trust one player more than another? You know, have you misplaced your trust in a player? Are you like, do some players need confidence to stay in the game or like stay in a certain formation, that sort of thing? That I don't think it's that simple.
Yeah.
Although sometimes it is. Like, yeah, yes, clearly she should have changed tactics, but I don't think it was a case of her not knowing what to do. I think there was a lot more that went into making the wrong decision.
Yeah. Yeah, it will be interesting. And now England move forward, likely without Lauren James, who has obviously been like the breakout star of this tournament for potentially the rest of the tournament. It does work slightly differently than it does in England, where for Melissa Tancredi, as you called it in Slack, in England, that would be an automatic 3-game suspension, but here it's one and then FIFA can add on to it, but it is almost certainly going to turn into a 3-game suspension, which is truly not ideal moving forward.
No, there's so many layers to what's going to go on around this, but all I think we can say is that a brilliant player who lost her temper in that moment, like more patient people than her have lost their tempers in this game.
Yep.
Over being irritated constantly. Like, that was the plan, right?
Yeah. I mean, Lauren James was wrapped up in that game. Like, she was not able to do what Lauren James can do. And again, full credit to Nigeria for like getting her to that point of like pure frustration.
Yeah. But also, I don't think they were expecting that.
And to be fair, like, I think have now also been blessed by one of the all time meme images of this tournament. With Michelle just kind of going like,
right,
what's happening?
Right. Like, right. So it seems like clearly it didn't hurt her.
No.
Like, it was just disrespectful to her.
Yeah.
But like, you can't do that. You can't step on people.
Right. Yeah. That is kind of a clear violation of the rules. You know, and I think the other part that really sucks right at the moment too is just knowing, and maybe it's going to be better because England got through this game, and maybe it will get worse if England then bow out the next one. But for any player of color, like, you immediately are just worried about what's going to happen. And I still feel like someone hopefully intervenes for Lauren James and like shuts down her social media for like, just take her phone, delete the apps, turn off all the notifications, and just be like, you are limited to your group chats. And your text messages.
Maybe not even group chats.
Yeah, like, maybe not.
No one is allowed to send you memes or links or texts. Like, if you want to talk to someone, you can talk to them in person. But
this is when I do always kind of think of, there's a small part of me that's like, what if I got a flip phone just to like have, not as my primary phone, but like in times of dire need where it's just like someone takes my iPhone and then I get a flip phone back. And then that's all you got. I don't know. Yeah, maybe for a World Cup scenario, it would be helpful.
Well, just remember, we're still old enough. Like, I don't think it's past the generation where, like, there were times you went out and you were unreachable. Like, you just had to reach your next destination. And if whoever knew you were there could, like, call your friend's mom and see if you arrived at their house or whatever. But that was it.
Yep. Yeah.
Man.
What a magical time that was. Although before Google Maps existed, and let me tell you, we have lived through the age of printing out MapQuest, but also full on physical maps. And I vastly prefer this part of it. Anyway.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Anyway. All right. Oh, I feel like this happened last time. Like, I don't even know where to begin on the US. There's a lot to begin with. So maybe let's start with a good thing, because I do think the general consensus is that Naomi Girma is our once and future king. Right? Like, our
Naomi
Girma.
What a defensive performance. And like, if there was one area where I just was like, that's bottom of the list and concerns, it was the central defense. Like, Girma and Ertz, they worked that pairing out for being like, I don't know you, you don't know me, let's go to a World Cup together.
Amazing. You know? It was truly like,
yeah,
that was, I think, the best bright spot of this tournament for the US. Like, not, I mean, I kept seeing it on Twitter last night, just of, this is an all-time defensive performance from this team coupled with an all-time worst finishing performance from this team. And sometimes you can sneak through a tournament with the lack of goals on the offensive side, but if you have that really strong defensive unit, right? Like, this is a team that allowed 2 shots on goals through 4 games and they are leaving the World Cup, right? Like, it does not compute on that number alone. So there is, I think, I mean, I feel like there's still plenty to be excited about around. Like, I feel like there's now, we're in the second stage of discourse now too, where like everybody panics, but I think rightfully so, of just like knowing that this is the earliest exit. Like, they have never gone out in the round of 16, right? Mm-hmm. They have always made it to a semifinal. That aside though, knowing that that group stage was not good enough, knowing that youth World Cup performances have not been good. Like, there's just bigger, to your like most loved metaphor of the iceberg. Like, we're seeing the highest level symptoms right now, but you go under the surface and there's just like a ton that needs to be addressed.
Yeah.
So I think there is that instinct of like, I don't want to say like it's not a catastrophe right now, because it's a catastrophe if you get to 2027 and the US does even more, like,
right,
or doesn't qualify, right? Like, that's the catastrophe. We're at the, like, there's other boats honking at us going, don't do that, right?
Yeah. If we were going to have a wobble, I think it felt now, like, watching the team up until now, and also looking at the generational handover, that was the theme, right, of this tournament. Generational handover to, like, a new generation of star players across global women's soccer, right? Yep. Not just for the United States.
Yep.
And so, like, dominance, like, surges and it ebbs and flows. It ebbs and flows. You can't just be dominant forever. You might have, like, legacy eras, and then you'll drop off just because of the change in personnel. People get older. I'm getting older too. Megan Rapinoe mentioned it, like, this is her last World Cup. I bet it's Alex Morgan's last World Cup. She's 34. They don't have Becky Sauerbrunn. Julie Ertz, this is her last World Cup. I think
she all but retired on air.
On the spot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, what did she come back for? She came back for this World Cup.
Right.
And so I don't know if she's going to be like, well, let's try to keep it going a little bit for the Olympics or not. But
that is not the vibe. That.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And that's a smaller roster too.
Yep.
So think about all the players that are gone. I don't know if Kristen Press and Tobin Heath are ever going to come back to the national team, just due to the timeline of their, like, recoveries and maybe where they seem to be just based on how they're talking about the game and their thoughts on it. Yep. So what's the next generation? Oh, it's Sophia Smith, Trinity Robin, Katarina Macario, Naomi Girma. Yeah. And they're still going to have, like, Horan, Lavelle. I think that's not a bad core to be going into the next 4 years with.
No. And that's the thing that is really exciting. It's just now, okay, we take the next step and who is going to step in as head coach, right? Because I think at this point, everybody can just... We all know Vlatko Andonovski's contract is not going to be renewed. I do think it's going to be kind of the mutual, like, you know, U.S. Soccer sent out a statement to those of us still on the ground here in Australia and New Zealand this morning saying, we're going to conduct a review. We'll do whatever it takes to regain our position. We don't know what the timeline is for a review like this, but Andonovski's contract is up. It does not have to be a firing to have the same impact, obviously. And I think, you know, there is probably a role for him still in club football. Like, he is a good club coach. Like, any NWSL team, I think, would probably be calling him if he's available again. So there is kind of that part of it. But then again, I think my bigger question is what happens with Kate Markgraf, right? Like, is it we got a tweak, or is it that bigger, we have to do a lot of big, big structural work. And that's the part that I'm praying for, is that it's the, oh God, we have to have some big, uncomfortable conversations about what we're prioritizing in the sport. We have to have some big, uncomfortable conversations about player development, about the role of college soccer, the role of potentially development academies, like how much money this is really going to take to be on par with kind of that natural infrastructure that Europe has right now.
So some parts of Europe have.
Some parts. So there is, I think, an immediate fallout part, but that's, to me, there's a much bigger, much bigger project ahead. And so the Olympics are going to be really interesting, just in terms of, do you completely reset? Do you, because usually the Olympics were kind of the extension, right? Like, it's kind of like that.
Okay. Well, qualifiers then start in fall, right? In a few months. So,
well, the US has already qualified though, because of the first place finish in W Championships in Monterey, right?
Yeah.
So we know that the team is going to the Olympics. So the question becomes, okay, well, first of all, how quickly can you get a new head coach in? Are we going to see an interim head coach at these two friendlies that they've already announced in September and give themselves a little time? I would guess there's just a lot of questions, but I think if we swing back around to the game itself, first of all, I will say it was my first time being in that stadium in Melbourne Rectangular Stadium. And I feel like I kept reading your comments about the Seagulls, and yet I was not prepared for the Seagulls.
They're bold.
Yeah.
They feel to me like in Jurassic Park, where the guy is hunting the raptor, and then the raptor pokes her head out. He's like, clever girl. Like, they're bold.
Yeah.
You know, that's their stadium, their home ground.
Yep.
And there were like several different girl gangs. They would each like pick a dome to perch on. And then, I mean, you captured it, right? As soon as people leave, it's time for girl dinner.
Oh, yeah. 100%. 100%. There was one, because I was kind of hovering, watching. Like, I did not go to the mix zone last night. I kind of held my post up in the media tribune and was watching. And then I just looked to the right, where also like the whole Angel City group people were. And there's one lone security guard just trying to like make himself big and be like, no, go away. And I was just like, buddy, that is a lost cause. Let them clean up the stadium for you.
Like, I know. I've seen these Seagulls. They don't even fly. They'll walk around in the street and like a huge freaking truck will drive by and they don't even walk out of the way because they understand like the roads and stuff, because birds are like weirdly smart. They're not going to be afraid of one security guard.
It was such a, last night after the, like after final whistle, everybody's like frantically getting packed up, running down to go to the mix zone. And I'm just kind of standing up there watching the Sweden team do their little lap.
Yeah.
And at one point they also like cut directly between Vlaco, who's doing his little post game flash commentary, and the US, who are still all just in the circle. I mean, like a listener is staring out into space, looking at absolutely nothing. And then to see this like little divide of blue and yellow cutting off Andonovsky from the rest of the team, I was just like,
right, to the tune of ABBA.
To the tune of Dancing Queen. Like, it was just so on the nose and so strange. Like, it was just a real time. Do you want to talk about Alyssa Nair?
Can't imagine. I feel like there's some science fiction short story in here about having everything taken away from you by a computer. like some kind of Black Mirror, you know?
Yeah. There was a real thought of the Netflix folks just watching that unfold.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, there is a sick small part of me that is like, honestly, that's a crazy ending for a document. Like, that's actually maybe, if they're going to lose, that is the most ridiculous possible way they could have done it.
Right. Well, the right writer or director, after the strike is over, could probably turn that into something really poignant and like a commentary. Although honestly, nothing is better, a commentary on like the cruel indifference of sports, than a seagull just waiting for everyone to leave and only caring about the fries that have been left behind. Like, that's like really perfect.
But yeah, I think one of my actual real favorite memories of being in that stadium last night was you had turned to talk to the person on your right, and Alyssa Nair was stepping up to take her penalty, and I literally just grabbed your entire jacket to like pull your attention back around, because I was just like, you have clearly not realized what's happening yet, because you are not reacting vocally to Alyssa Nair stepping up to take a penalty.
Right. Who saw her being, was she fifth or sixth in the order?
I think like sixth.
I think she was after the initial five when it came down to like spot kicks.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, okay. So she's like, and she's a Terminator. I got it. She's a Terminator.
It was just also her penalty was so ice cold. Like she, if the goalkeeper had not moved, she would have drilled her directly in the face.
Going down the middle is always like there's panache, and there's also like a real level of like FU about it.
Yeah.
You know?
And that was truly an FU penalty.
Yeah.
So I do keep thinking about her making her penalty, obviously her performance just across the entire night from a goalkeeping point of view, but then also Christy Mewis literally getting a single minute of playing time and her first touch being a penalty kick. And just
look, New England is very proud of the girlies.
We were having some real Boston Breakers level emotions.
I was literally texting someone like, let's go Boston girls, let's go.
In both like all the good ways and all the bad ways of just pure pain, but also, yeah, appreciation for Amuis and Nair. But have you watched Sam Mewis watching her take the penalty kick? Because I feel like that's also just a perfect.
She's so proud of Christy. She's so happy for her. I was like, ugh, that's finally something nice.
Yeah, true.
This episode is supported by season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
So the game itself, before we got to penalties, which was the most agonizing 11-ish minutes.
You took a picture of me. I literally had to go under the desk for like a hot second to just be like, and then come back up.
Yeah, it was just because I remember. So Emily Olson, our editor, and I looked over because we had basically stood most of the game. Like I knew that I was probably not. The theory was I was not writing immediately following the game, so I was kind of content to just kind of sit and watch and just kind of take it in.
Stood there like a middle-aged dad just watching.
Oh, yeah, fully. Like, yeah, it's just a...
Arms folded. Yeah.
Yep. But it was, first of all, Emily Sonnet coming in to play as part of a double pivot along Andy Sullivan and having like truly a great performance despite not playing previously. But also, I think some justification for Andy Sullivan, who had looked not great through the start of the tournament, and then putting her in a system that complemented her. And it's like, oh, like we promise Andy Sullivan is not at this level that you think she's at. She's actually a very good player, and there's a reason why she's on this team.
Right. She wasn't getting the support she needed. Yep. It's like that good place speech from GD where it's like, how no, from Michael, right? Where it's like, how can we blame people for not succeeding when they don't get the support that they need?
Yeah.
She just needed some support.
The swaps of the 4-2-3-1 worked. Something that
I think
a lot
several of us from The Athletic.
Really, really. And also I think Kristen Preston Tobenheath for calling for it. Jess Fishlock was called. I mean, I feel like everybody was looking at this and saying the 4-3-3 is not working. And if you get a formation shift and the tactical benefit that comes with the 4-2-3-1, you're going to change the way. And I mean, like, it was so sad that I was so excited that they were making little triangles to pass the ball. Like, it was literally like that level of, oh, they're getting the basics right again.
Yeah, I don't want to be too complimentary because there were still moments where a player would get the ball and I was like, where is she supposed to?
Yes.
What is she supposed to do with this? Who?
The prayer circles still appeared at times. Like, yeah. It was not a perfect turnaround by any stretch.
But they shifted formation, you know, so I'm like, all right, I'll give them a little like wiggle room here, right? And then, like, the obvious caveat is, we have 2020 hindsight, I guess, whatever. Yeah. And then when Megan Rapinoe came in, I think we had noted, everybody had noted, like, okay, yes, they're delivering the crosses, but they're really lacking. Like, you know, they're getting in the box, but it's not like, it's not connecting. Players are crashing, but they're missing each other. And so in theory, a Megan Rapinoe like helps sharpen that up.
Yep.
And I think this is maybe part of something that we can discuss a bit. It got worse.
It got considerably worse. Yes.
Andy Sullivan had better set piece delivery than Megan Rapinoe last
week. Megan's delivery on set pieces, on corner kicks, just like across the minutes that she did get in this tournament.
Right.
Like, the thing is, for me, if you still decide to bring her as a leader on this team, especially with Becky Sauerbrunn not going, I think it's understandable. But in that moment, I know that the play is, okay, you've got to get Pino on for a penalty kick.
Yeah.
But first of all, I think that needs to be one of those like super late, because she has the mentality in theory, right? To come on at, in the 119th minute and come on step and take a penalty. Like that's not a question. And Alyssa Thompson might be able to fit that, what the objective is on the field in that moment better. But you do have players on the field in that moment who are able to take free kicks that aren't Megan Rapinoe. But I mean, honestly, like
I would have switched the Mewis and Rapinoe suborder.
Yeah.
I would have brought in Mewis sooner if we're talking about that left sided area and someone who can smack it with their left foot and like deliver a ball and has decent set piece delivery.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. Yeah, it is. I mean, it was just kind of like a baffling, because also Rapinoe, like having been out and seen her play in Seattle in the game where she gets three assists, like it's not like the touch wasn't there, but it was something about the national team environment of the world. I don't know what it was, but it was just like it was not there, and it was very clear that it was not there. And I think by the end of the group stage, you have to make that super hard decision of her minutes need to go down.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's the same exact decision around Alex Morgan, that the system does not suit her and her style of play. If you need to get like Sophia Smith, honestly has to be prioritized as the number nine at this point.
Yeah.
So like an adjustment was made in the game against Sweden, but like not enough. Yeah. And to be fair, you know, I don't know if you've had the chance to read it, but Kim McCauley and Jeff Reuter just had a really good kind of breakdown of at least some of the main issues of roster management from Vlatko Nanovsky, and a lot of what we've already hit on is also in that article. They also have the most secretly horrifying chart of minutes played across the roster that is just, you look at it and you're just like, cool, that didn't have to happen like that.
Right. I haven't read it yet because my night went right up the goodbye to Megan Rapinoe sad bastard story. And then like run back to my hotel, finish packing, try to get a human amount of sleep.
Yep.
Go to the airport, just barely make it to check in my luggage because I forgot that I needed to be a little earlier than I normally am when it comes to Air New Zealand. Fly to Auckland, eat something, watch England, Nigeria, and here I am.
Yeah.
Yep. But I did see the horrified reaction in Slack. So I was like, oh, good. There's a little treat waiting for me at the end of this.
Yeah, it is definitely. I mean, I think, though, that there is also, it's pretty fair. I mean, that's the thing is, a lot of mistakes got made in this tournament by a lot of different people. And at the end of the day, there are people making those mistakes. And I do enjoy remembering that those are people on the other end of it. So
you almost don't want to do it right now because it feels really mean. Like while the players, like a couple of players were flying out today, the day after the game, which sometimes happens. And, you know, they had their hoods fully up in the airport. They clearly just didn't want to be recognized or seen, which is such a like real human. And you like you don't want to bother them and or you don't want to say anything about the performance. It just feels like you're kicking them while they're down. Like,
yeah,
it can wait. It's kind of like when someone comes to you and they've clearly messed up their own life. But now is not the right time to tell them like this is your own fault. Right.
Right. Yep.
Just wait a little bit and then be like, OK, let's figure out what went wrong. But like, I, you know, it's our job. And then hopefully none of the players are actually listening to this. God forbid.
Yeah, truly.
No social media. Put all the phones in a pillowcase and then like throw the pillowcase into the river.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that's the thing too, though, is that they are pros and they understand that there's going to be criticism, right? But I think that's the line of just, and I think it has been crossed in this tournament by a lot of different people of criticizing players for performance decisions or coaches for decisions and then like crossing that line into like a comment that looks and feels pretty personal. So
right,
it's like Crystal Dunn after the Portugal game got a lot of comments that I did not super care for, and also obviously like there's a whole level too of discourse that I just want to completely ignore around this team right now because they lost. And finally, there's a whole chunk of our country that gets to gloat about that. So that's pleasant.
Yeah.
Really don't enjoy that. Like, so that's the part that really makes me nervous too, is that there is just this whole section of society that's like, oh, they went woke, so they lost. And it's like, this team has not really been that, like this version of the team, they have been political in some ways, but not to the extent like
no, it's actually tapered off a lot recently just because like they're busy or they've said what they meant to say. And
so there's just like there's always that like fun mix of misogyny and racism and also like homophobia, like just a lot of things are happening in that mix. And I just like that's where I really hope that there is a really good firewall for the players.
Because there is also a contingent of people who are like, I support this team and I understand that there are people and they might have made mistakes, but you know, everybody makes mistakes. I think Lindsey Horan said she talked to Sophia Smith and was saying like, everyone misses penalties, with like the best players in the world have missed penalties. And people understand that like, yes, it's upsetting and sad, but like you can be upset about sports without, you know, making it about who someone is as a person. I think that's the danger in associating performance with morality.
Yeah.
Which goes both ways. Yeah. Right. Being like, my favorite player is a good person and therefore is a good player.
Yep.
Right. Yeah. You kind of have to like separate the two and be like, people have their.
Yeah. Well, I know that you have somehow turned into essentially the like obituary writer of The Athletic in this tournament with pieces on Sinclair and Marta and Pino. But first, I want to give you props because every single one of those has been different in its own way. Because also, like, these are three very different players, three massive legends of the game. But I was really struck by reading your Pino piece last night when I was still awake at 4 a.m. local time here because I couldn't sleep. The sense of how she immediately went to her family for comfort, and that there, like, there is this sense of, like, there's a person in there.
Yeah.
Because she immediately got shit for laughing, which is, to me, the most Megan Rapinoe reaction, because, I mean, it's something that she has literally never done before, is miss target.
Right. It was like disbelief. When she came through the mix zone, she was like shell-shocked.
Yeah.
It was that inappropriate laugh. And she called it that. She's like, I've always been someone who makes like a joke at the inappropriate time. She couldn't understand it. She kept going over it. She was like rambling a little bit in front of us. Like, what a sick joke. Like, it's so weird. You guys thought I was going to score, right? Like, yeah. Oh, God. And like, you could see that she just had not, it hadn't sunk in yet.
Yeah.
And then there's also like the combo of like, oh, so she's supposed to turn around and hang her head and trudge back to her teammates and then, like, maybe skunk the attitude for the next person to take a penalty?
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, if you're a leader on the team, yeah, 100%. There is that sense of trying to balance both your own personal, like, it's not even disappointment isn't even a good accurate word for it. Like, you're crushed, right? But also, yeah. you know that this penalty shootout is going to keep going. So you've got to balance that emotion in the moment.
Yeah.
So it is really, I do want to leave us on a good note and say, so I did make the truly unhinged decision to rewatch the penalty shootout today because I felt like I remembered half of it fairly well. And also I wanted to actually see how much contact Alyssa Nayer made with that final penalty from Hertig, right? In terms of like how, because in the moment I was like, oh, she got it. So I wanted to be like, was it kind of clear right off the bat of how the ball spun back in?
Mm-hmm.
Not really. But I will say when Alyssa Nayer made her penalty, Andy Sullivan had just truly the best reaction of the night of just like this pure like stomping joy. And I was just like, that's the moment that I want to, like, I'm actually glad that I rewatched this because that's the moment I want to take and cling to.
Yeah, I think Pino kind of mentioned it. She was, you know, again, obviously a little bit in shock. She's like, now that I'm 38 and in therapy, like, that's life. And yeah, there is something to be said for just kind of like, you have to accept that it happened and internalize it and be like, yeah, that was crappy. It happened. But yeah, you know what? I can hold it and then I can keep going. And then there's going to be a next time and a next time and a next time.
Yep.
And we'll always have Andy's soul. I didn't know Andy had that in her, by the way, that kind of like,
it was so like, good. Yeah.
You need, like, if nothing else, like, you can, once you can stomach it. Yeah. Everyone should go see Andy.
Yeah.
Do
was,
that.
Yeah. It was very good. It was very good. So, all right, Steph, I will leave you to hopefully get like an actual night's sleep / we will move on to actually finishing watching this Australia game, which is going on right now.
I was about to say, I'm not sleeping. It's 11:30 local. Australia's playing Denmark.
Yep. So, all right. Well, I'm sure, check back in with you. The joy will be trying to do this podcast now when I am in a very different time zone again. So we'll see how it goes, but I'm still like, I'm happy to be going home, mostly because I'm just very done with being sick in this weather. But I am definitely jealous to not be at some of the remaining games. So have a good time. First
I'll
and
foremost, hi to any seagulls on the other side of this Japan Sweden game.
If you manage to get out to Waiheke Island, you gotta go out and see my pals at the Heike. So that's all.
Yeah. Did you know Waiheke Island is the hometown of Sony Bell, who was Xena Warrior Princess's stunt double starting from about season 2?
Okay. On that note, it's the sleep deprivation is hitting. Bye, everyone. We will be back at some point in this tournament. I promise. Bye for now.